Welcome to the tax update for 30th November. And in this month's edition, we've got five items, some good news and some bad news. But the first is the Uber decision, which considered whether taxi drivers using the Uber app were self-employed or employees. And this received quite a lot of publicity at the end of October. And there's a 40-page decision which affects some 30,000 drivers in London and about 40,000 throughout the country, in which the tribunal found that the taxi drivers were in fact employees because they were under the management and control of Uber. I expect this case to run, and HMRC are likely to be taking further action, particularly in the construction industry sector. So if in doubt, I recommend that you try and use the employment status indicator, which is available on HMRC's website, and read this particular case. The other side of this is an interesting argument concerning a Mr. Ashton, who was a martial arts instructor, whether or not he was a partner in Karate World, controlled by Mr. Thompson, or an employee of that organisation. And he had signed declarations, including a CWF-1, as well as self-assessment returns, saying that Mr. Ashton was self-employed. But in fact, he was paid regularly £1,333 a month, and could receive bonus payments, and did receive holiday and sick pay. So, on balance, the evidence suggested that he was in fact an employee, and this was the finding of the tribunal. The case is of interest because HMRC usually argue that an individual is an employee, whereas in this case HMRC were arguing that Mr. Ashton was a partner and self-employed. But the court found in the balance of probability that there was mutuality of obligation, an entitlement to holiday and sick pay, and that he was subject to control by Mr. Thompson. Therefore, he was an employee. If you're involved in a dispute in this area, this case would definitely be worth examining. Another interesting case, which went to tribunal, is whether the father or the daughter, who were both directors of the company, should be assessed on the benefit in kind, being the cost paid by the company for the care of the father's wife. The father, Mr. Bayliss, was an octogenarian who had suffered a heart attack and basically resigned from the company, leaving it in the charge of his illegitimate daughter, who was a chartered accountant and who had become involved in the company initially on a voluntary basis. But there was an acrimonious dispute between Mr. Bayliss's legitimate daughter, Miss Sarah Bayliss, and his illegitimate daughter, and the illegitimate daughter took over control of the company. The company had made a disclosure report to HMRC admitting that it had got things wrong, and this was part of the evidence used by HMRC to assess Miss Bayliss. But they also tried to assess her on various items of personal expenditure which the previous accountants had disclosed had been identified and added to her director's loan account and cleared by way of a dividend payment. HMRC appear to have failed to test the credibility of the evidence or to take into account that the two half-sisters were acrimoniously in dispute. And so they relied upon the availability of the daughter, Miss Bayliss, to assess upon her the care home costs, which were very substantial and quite beyond her income. But when it went to tribunal, the tribunal ruled that there was a priority for settling a benefit in kind, and it was not at the discretion of the company, but rather because the spouse took precedent over the daughter, the benefit should be assessed on Mr. Bayliss. And in this case, the tax assessments raised by HMRC against the daughter, Ms. Bayliss, were discharged, and it had a happy ending. Another happy ending arises in Carrasco, which examined a capital gains tax issue and whether or not Mr. and Mrs. Carrasco had established only a main residence and therefore a 3-year exemption from capital gains tax, when they had in fact entered into an agreement to sell the property before they even moved into it. But the couple had relied upon their advisor that this exemption was available in respect of a property which Mrs. Carrasco had inherited in 1988 and which had in the intervening years been let out. The couple were facing penalties in the case of Mrs. Carrasco of nearly £17,000 and in the case of Mr. Carrasco £6,647. And they had undoubtedly made an error in their tax return because their claim to have owned and occupied and used the property as their only or main residence was incorrect. But they had sought advice from their accountant. And what is interesting about this decision given by Mr. Jones, QC, is that he starts from a proposition that tax laws in this country are complex and convoluted, and that it is reasonable where somebody relies upon advice from a competent professional advisor that they have taken reasonable care and therefore they should not be penalised. I find this very interesting, and this persuasive authority might be useful because the evidence is overwhelming that HMRC are now seeking penalties in cases which is not appropriate, and they have sought penalties when a mistake in a complex area of law has been made. And that is wrong, but very few people can defend the action. Paragraph 25 of the decision is particularly interesting. But finally, the area of what your responsibility should be in tax avoidance has been clarified and will apply from March 2017, because the 7 major professional bodies, which includes the Association of Accounting Technicians, have published guidance on professional conduct in relation to taxation. And this is a must read for anybody in practice, or indeed anybody actually working in the accountancy area. And I recommend it to you because, as usual, this podcast is accompanied by detailed notes and links should further research be done. And in this case, the 55 pages of professional conduct in relation to taxation must be required reading for every member. Thanks for listening.